Now that Facebook is a fact of life for millions and dating sites are normal, it's less weird to think about choosing one's mate based on a few pictures and some text. But now imagine you're not just choosing a mate, but the genetic material for your child. Want a little more time with those profiles? Producer Matt Larson brings us the story of one woman trying to choose the perfect seed for her child in a piece called Two Women, a Frenchman, and Seth Rogen All Walk Into a Bank.
Sorry, that's Oscar.
Oscar is a healthy 4-month-old baby with blonde hair, fair skin, and big blue eyes. Generally, he's a pretty mellow baby, but today he's feeling a bit under the weather.
Oscar just got his first cold yesterday.
That's Oscar's mom.
I'm Christina Amini. I'm an editor at Chronicle Books, and I'm here with my 4-month-old son, Oscar.
Christina is a former Stanford undergrad, and she agreed to talk to us today about Oscar's story. Christina, unlike Oscar, has dark hair, olive skin, and brown eyes.
Well, a friend of mine asked me this the other day because she has a little baby girl, and her mother-in-law keeps saying to her, like, oh, she's just like Bill as a baby. Can't you just see it? And nobody said that to me. In fact, one of my mom's friends said, oh, he doesn't look like an Amini.
For some reason, with babies, eyes are often the go-to example when looking for hereditary traits. Maybe it's because things like eye and hair color are so apparent in our physical appearance. Or maybe it's because how we get our eye and hair color is something we all think we understand.
I didn't know very much about genes. I mean, I knew kind of basic high school genetics of eye color. I just assumed he would have brown eyes because I have brown eyes and it's dominant.
It turns out the model of eye color inheritance most of us learned in high school is wrong, at least slightly. Although we used to think it was determined by one or two genes, we now know that at least 8 genes play into the final color of our eyes, and there are likely more. Even though this model was proposed more than a century ago, and despite the fact that we have known for a long time that eye color is a much more complicated thing than we once thought, our desire to make predictions about our offspring hasn't changed. In fact, with the recent sequencing of the human genome, it seems possible that scientists may someday find the biological underpinnings for a whole host of human traits. Maybe there's a gene for being left-handed, or liking pets.
Basically, you take it for granted, like whoever your partner is, you fall in love with them and then you think, oh, I'm going to have kids with them. And there's no like background check of, you know, oh, what was your ancestors' cancer history like? Or what are we looking for in terms of your genes? Basically, if Ellie and I could have had kids, you know, genetically together, then that would have been it.
In Christina's case, every trait was an option, something she could select. That's because Christina and her partner, Ellie, decided to search for a sperm donor online.
Okay, well, I do want to be pregnant. And she was less crazy about being pregnant. And she's also kind of caretaking in her personality. And I think me being pregnant and her, like, kind of watching out for me also worked. And so, how are we going to make that happen? And so we decided to look for a sperm donor. And so the biggest bank is called California Cryobank, and so we just looked there. And it's kind of like a combination of Amazon and Match.com. I always thought that a sperm bank would have, like, all these millions of binders or something that you go through. I don't know where I got that idea, but that's not the case. You basically enter in a search, and so there, you know, there's a database, and you put in, like, blue eyes, brown hair, what ethnicity you are, you know. And so we basically wanted to choose somebody who had Ellie's physical characteristics. That seemed like, okay, that's sort of important. So he looks like both of us.
On the other side of the process, the California Cryobank is doing its own screening.
I think in general, people are most concerned with a healthy child, and that's their number one priority, and that's our number one priority.
That's Scott Brown, Director of Communications for the California Cryobank.
We offer a number of services, but the main service that our reputation and company's been built on is providing high-quality donor semen for people in need. We set a pretty high bar in terms of both the scientific screening testing that we do, the educational requirements we have of our donors, height, weight, all in all, we want to provide as good a quality and as safe a product as we can for our client. That's sort of the medical perspective. We want to qualify guys that meet all those high standards, and that really eliminates about 99% of our applicants. It's usually less than 1% of our applicants actually make it through.
This is one of the surprising aspects of the modern sperm donation industry. It's a fairly rigorous process, and the cryobank has come a long way since its founding in the late 70s.
Really the big, I think, twist in their business model came in the 80s with HIV, and the majority of donor insemination was done with live sperm. It wasn't frozen. It was just the doctor had a medical student working in his office, and Bob, the medical student, would go into a room, collect a sample, bring it out to the doctor, and he would inseminate his patient. The patients didn't have much say in who the donor was. They didn't really have any choice. It wasn't like you had a catalog to choose from. It's whoever was in the office that day was the guy you were going to end up with.
Now the company has three branches, each of which is strategically located near a top U.S. university. In fact, about 75% of the donors come from Stanford, MIT, Harvard, or UCLA.
We do require all donors to be enrolled in or graduated from a four-year university. The educational requirements are based on the idea that we want intelligent, responsible young men entering our program. We spend a lot of money and take a lot of time to qualify them. So if guys are flakes and disappear on us, it costs us a lot of money and also doesn't bode well for the future in terms of them keeping in contact with us, giving us medical updates on themselves or their family, or potentially being available for a meeting with a child once that child turns 18 and requests it. It's a lot of work. I mean, it's not like the movies where you walk in the door, deposit in the cup, get handed a $100 bill and walk out the door. I mean, you're signing up for a year to 2 year program. You're getting poked and prodded. You're getting blood drawn every couple months. You have to keep a regular schedule with us. You have to adjust your personal sexual schedule if you're sexually active, because you need to abstain for a minimum of 48 hours between donations. It's a lot of stuff that the average 20-year-old doesn't have to do.
Cryobank goes to great lengths to provide as much information as possible to their clients. And each client is looking for something a little bit different.
A lot of our heterosexual couples don't want to know that stuff about the donor. All they want to know is that the guy is healthy, how tall he is, and that everything else is safe. And they don't know anything about him. I'd say the lesbian couples are more interested in that stuff, but I would say by far the single women are the most interested in making the emotional connection to the donor. And all those questions about pets and everything else is just because we want to provide as much information as possible, because you never know what it is about a donor that's going to click for the client and help them make that decision and have confidence in that decision.
Even though all this information can be helpful to people looking for just the right donor, it can also be a bit daunting. Christina explains.
I had one friend who made this elaborate kind of chart of of every single person that the bank that she liked offered, and all the pros and cons of it. We were not that scientific, because it's really weird and overwhelming at first. And how Ellie and I ended up doing it was, I ended up doing sort of a large screen of I chose a whole bunch of people and chose maybe 10 who I was maybe these people we have something in common with, and then she kind of narrowed it down. And Ellie loves animals, so it was a total deal breaker for her if they didn't like pets. She said that, maybe it's a wives' tale or urban legend, but people who don't like pets are possibly sociopathic, or are, no, worse than that, that they may be serial killers.
Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Ba, 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 better run, 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 run.
They are doing the weirdest marketing campaign right now, where they are having you choose. You can choose what celebrity you want the baby to look like. Seriously. So you can be like Bill Cosby. And then you get five different donors who have something in common with Bill Cosby.
It's my program. I actually started the whole thing.
That's Scott again.
So what the lookalikes are intended to do is give people a sense of, okay, I've got these two different guys. They're both 6 foot one, brown hair, green eyes, yada, yada, yada. But they could be different types. They could be a more sort of macho-y, masculine-y Brett Favre type, or they could be sort of a more pretty boy Brad Pitt type, or they could, you know, there's different variables within statistics when you're talking about appearance. And so we thought it would be a fun way to do it. We thought it would be helpful to people and make it very easy to get a sense of what the guys really looked like beyond just the baby photos and the facial feature reports and things that we offer.
And like all the other screening the Cryobank does, it's a pretty thorough process.
We have a group of employees made up of male, female, age range from probably 23 to 45, different ethnicities within the group, different interests, and it actually helps a lot because if you have three or four or five or six, or usually we have 4 to 6 people anytime we're doing a meeting, if you all have the exact same interests, you come up with the same list of people. But if you have one kid who's into alternative rock and someone else who's in their 40s and watched a lot of TV in the 80s and 90s, or someone who's into movies or politics, you sort of get a much bigger sampling of pop culture. And so we set out from the beginning to be as accurate as we could, which means we end up with the Bob Sagets or the Stephen Colberts or the Bill Gateses of the world. So it's not all just handsome leading men. That wasn't our intent to suggest to people that all our donors look like Johnny Depp, because that just isn't the case.
In browsing through the list of celebrity lookalikes, there are a lot of choices. You can get Anthony Edwards from ER or Anthony Edwards of the Top Gun version. If you're into the young, not old Leif Garrett, you can have that too. You can even choose a donor who looks like Biff from Back to the Future.
Earth angel, will you be mine? My darling dear, love you all the time.
As much as the women of the world all wished that we all looked like Brad Pitt and George Clooney, we don't. And 40% of our clients are heterosexual couples where the husband is experiencing fertility issues. So they want a donor who looks as much like the husband as possible. If that husband happens to look like Bill Gates, well, then they're going to be very happy to find a donor who looks like Bill Gates. And we've actually done extensive statistical analysis of our donors to try and figure out exactly what it is that makes a guy sell. You know, is it 6'2", blonde hair, blue eyes, and we can't keep the guy on the shelf? And after an extended like regression analysis of 10 years worth of sales information, we came up with basically nothing. Over 6 feet is somewhat more popular than under 6 feet, and brown hair and light eyes is somewhat more popular than dark eyes. But overall, the only thing we can conclude is that people are making decisions based on their own individual wants and needs, not on some general perception of what would be the ideal male donor.
For Christina and Ellie, their search was not driven by celebrity lookalikes.
It didn't exist when we chose. So then when I went back and was like, oh, who does our donor look like? And it was like, Seth Rogen? Oh, God. Like, what if I had had something really weird with Seth Rogen? You know, what if I had some weird idea of like, oh, no, I hated that movie Knocked Up, so I'm not, you know, like, and kind of a good movie, for, whatever. It just seems like adding in more factors in some ways would make the decision even harder for people, and bring in different associations of like, oh, well, I love that movie, so therefore I'm going to choose that person.
Take a second and imagine yourself in Christina and Ellie's shoes. You're basically trying to build a complete person from the ground up. What would you choose? Would you choose a donor you're attracted to, or someone you'd like as a friend? Is it more important that your child is an athlete or an intellectual? At different phases of our lives, we have all valued different qualities in different people. How can you make a catch-all decision that covers every situation your child might encounter? Eventually, Christina realized that there wasn't much she could do to guide the fates.
I think I just, at some point, felt like we had to let go in terms of our control. But, you know, even people who are 100% biologically related siblings can look totally different, be totally different. So I think it was realizing, like, you just can't control it. Because who knows which of the millions of sperm that are out there are going to, like, find the egg and be the one that turns out to be Oscar.
In the end, for Christina and Ellie, it came down to a simple guiding principle.
One way to think about it is, okay, imagine sitting on a couch with your 15-year-old son explaining to him how you chose the donor.
And just like Scott said it happened with so many other mothers, they made an emotional connection with the donor.
Really, how we chose was that the person just seemed like he would kind of be our friend. He ended up being 100% French, which Ellie's not. But we're like, okay, you know, sounds good, sure. And he really likes music, as Ellie does. And they ask the question, why are you doing this? And most of the people who are sperm donors are like 20, 22 years old, looking for money. You know, like, I mean, that's fine. They're honest. They're writing that. He wrote that he had friends who had fertility issues and so went through the process. And so we kind of liked that about him too, that he was doing it sort of out of empathic reasons. And they also ask a question, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And he said that he's a professor. And so he wanted to be teaching and have a family and have a house with a big library and a summer home in Burgundy. And I was like, wow, yeah, that sounds good. I can relate to that.
L'assassin du dimanche n'est pas bien dangereux.
So then I called the cryobank. He's like, okay, how many do you have left of the donor? And they said, oh, we only have two left. So I was like, oh my gosh, only two left? You know, it was like the weirdest impulse purchase I made of the year was $1,000 of sperm.
As I mentioned at the start, Oscar doesn't look all that much like Christina. But at this point, with Oscar safely in her lap, none of this seems to bother her now.
I don't know. I just feel so lucky to be able to have a son. And in some ways, I mean, does it matter that he's biologically related to me? Kind of not. Even though we went through all of this to make it that he was, in some ways it doesn't matter.
For most of the clients that Scott has come across during his time at the cryobank, this is the same conclusion they reach as well.
I sort of half joke that, you know, money back guarantee, if you're not satisfied with your child, we'll take it back at, you know, no cost to you. I have never heard of a client who wasn't completely satisfied with their child once they were born. Any of the issues we have generally are about shipping problems or FedEx, you know, the plane breaks down and they miss their cycle and, you know, that kind of thing. But in general, once people have their kids, no, I've never heard of anybody being anything but thrilled. People who have experience with it, I think, are impressed by everything we do. I think when people go into it, they assume it's more like the movies. You don't realize all the testing and screening and all the care and time we put into making sure that they have a great opportunity for a healthy child.
For both Christina and the cryobank, the primary concern was ensuring the best possible future for Oscar. And that means going through the due diligence of screening donors to weed out any potential problems. But in the world of genetics, there are no guarantees. And even though we know a lot more now than we used to about how different traits get passed on, there's still a lot we don't know. Both Scott and Christina seem to have learned this fact through their shared experience with the cryobank.
Genetics are a mystery. I mean, I have regular conversations with our genetic counselors to try and understand certain mutations or diseases or things I read about or things that we come across. And there's more we don't know than we do know. We know a lot, but there's more that we don't know. You talk about like autism, where everyone knows there has to be a genetic component to autism, but nobody can figure out what it is. You know, where is it? On what gene is it? It's just a mystery, and people are working on it, and someday I'm sure it'll be solved, but I think we have way more to learn about ourselves and about our genetic makeup than we already know.
I think it made me think about just what is genetically determined and what isn't. I still don't know. I mean, how do my genetics and the donors kind of overlap or intersect, or if we both love music, does that mean Oscar will doubly love music, or, you know, or have a better chance at it? Or maybe it'll just be that Oscar goes to the symphony once and falls in love.
The only thing Christina knew with absolute certainty is that she wanted the best for Oscar. And thinking about genes meant thinking about the qualities that would give him the best shot at a full life.
You know, who cares what his eye color is, but I guess the most important thing is wanting him to be it sounds like a cliche, but wanting him to be happy, of like living a rich life where he can be his authentic self and feel excited and spazzy, or that he can delight in things and feel like he himself is a delight, and that he feels, I don't know, maybe both satiated and wants to participate and give and be a part of the world in a rich way. I guess that's what I would want for him. Someone once said, like, you know, as they saw Oscar, like, from 1 month to month two, said, oh, Oscar is just looking more and more like himself. And I feel like that was kind of the best way to put it. Hi, buddy.